Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit michters.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. In the Drink comes to you live from Roberta's Restaurant here in Bushwick, New York, every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. And it can also be accessed past episodes you can find on www.heritageradionetwork.org and also on iTunes. I'm your host of In the Drink, Joe Campanelli. When I'm not here hosting the show, you can find me at one of our restaurants where I serve as the beverage director at Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, Lapicho, and Anfora. And I'm excited. I can't believe that our guest on the show today actually hasn't been here yet. We've been doing this show for like 2 years, and shame on me for not having David Lombardo here earlier. He's the wine and beverage director for Benchmark Restaurants. We have Landmark, the original down in Tribeca, Landmark in Time Warner Center, and Ditch Plains, our neighbor in the West Village. David's known for having just awesome wine lists, extremely affordable, kind of makes some of us, the rest of us in the industry, look bad because his prices are so damn good, and just being one of the nicest guys all around. So welcome to In the Drink.
Thank you for having me, man. It's great to be here.
Really impressive. You guys have been around for 11 years. I remember last year, the 10 year, I was like, holy shit, like Landmark's been around 10 years now, and now you guys are on 11 years. That's in this restaurant industry, like, not unheard of, but it's right. Just so rare. What do you attribute to this longevity, and how do you keep things just fresh and keep going on?
You know, it's interesting. The first Landmark, and you know, we opened up in 2004, and we were looking at what kind of style we want to do. And my buddy Mark Murphy, who's the chef, you know, he had cooked in some really high-end restaurants all over the city, and he worked in Paris and a bunch of places. And he said, you know, people come in to see me in these restaurants on their anniversaries, for their birthdays. He's like, but no one just stops by to say hi because everything's high-end. So he's like, we want to establish a really great neighborhood restaurant. Accessible menu size, affordable prices. And we just always really wanted to embrace the community. So that's how the, you know, Landmark came about. And, you know, when we opened up there, one of the things we started learning more about the neighborhood, it's in Tribeca, was how many families there were there. And we've seen kids grow up in our restaurant. So, you know, really, you know, we were rummaging through some stuff in the beginning. We, in one of the restaurant shops, and these guys found an old cotton candy machine, right? And they put, so we brought in a cotton candy. Mark's like, yeah, we're gonna, you know, have cotton candy for the kids. And we were like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And then it just became this thing. So all these little things that you pick up as you go along, and you realize, we always say we want to be around for a really long time. When we open up all of our restaurants, but especially Landmark Tribeca, people would come in and they'd say, wow, you guys are so hot right now. And my first reaction was, thank you for the compliment, but I don't want to be hot. I want to be warm. You know, I want to be around for a long time, because when you're hot, you're going to get cold.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there's just you know what it's like. It's like, why is one place packed and then the place next door is empty? You know, the people, the food, the accessibility, just the culture that's around it, I think.
Yeah, and I think like there's a fickleness to the restaurant industry in general, right? And the way that the media portrays it, like something can be, just as you said, hot one day, and then you're like, holy shit, that place closed.
Right.
Like, how did that happen?
In a blink of an eye. What happened?
What happened?
Right. Just
so
that quick.
Having that like warm, friendly service and good value and delicious everything. You guys just completely nailed it.
Yeah.
I know that you and Mark have been together for a long time,
right?
Even before Ditch Plains. Talk about how you guys got together in the first place.
It's pretty cool. You know, I was not in the restaurant business ever in my life. I graduated with a degree in English and philosophy from Fordham, and then I was in healthcare for about 3 years, and I took a break. You know, I wanted to take a break, and I always thought bartenders were really cool in college, and I was like, oh, I always wanted to bartend. My parents were not very happy with me at the time. They just dropped a bunch of money on my education, but I wanted to be happy. You know, I'd seen a lot of things in, you know, early on in my life that made me believe, wow, if you have to make money to live, you should damn well be happy doing it. So I started attending bar, and I hooked up. One of my first jobs was with the Merchants Restaurant Group, and Murphy had a restaurant with them on the Upper East Side called La Fourchette. And then he came down to this place to take over the kitchen at Southwest New York. And then we both went over to a new restaurant they had called Chinoiserie, which is was on 26th Street in the Giraffe Hotel. So it was there that we really started working really close together. Now, the ownership of the hotel and the guys from Merchants ended up splitting up, and they invited Mark to stay and run the kitchen. And the guys from Merchants asked me to, you know, go and be placed as a bartender somewhere else. And Murphy turned to me and he's like, dude, he's like, just stay with me. He's like, run the bar. I'll do the kitchen and we'll own this place. You know, we'll take care of it. And it really was like one of those like two roads diverged in a wood sort of like moments in my life where I looked at both different sides and I looked at Murphy. I was like, I'll hang out with you, man. I'll chill with you for a while. Right. And that's where our friendship and our working relationship really got solidified. Well, that place eventually closed and we did a bunch of side projects together. And then in 2003, Mark and his wife Pamela bought this building down in Tribeca, and we put a Landmark in there, man, and it just hit. You know, that neighborhood, for a while, there was not that much going on. You know, the towers are a stone's throw away, and there was not that much activity, and I brought a lot of life.
I remember it being, like, quiet, like, super quiet in that neighborhood. You know, at that time, that was, like, around when I was going to school down at NYU, and, like you just didn't go to Tribeca. It was, like, just quiet.
Right.
And now it's, like, this super booming neighborhood.
Super booming. You know, we've seen so many places open and close around us. I mean, I think we did a count a couple years back where it was, like, within the past 11 years, there's been at least like 40 new restaurants open up within a, you know, 10 square block, you know, and that's a lot, but, you know, it's interesting. But, you know, so when people ask me, they say, you know, how long have you been with Landmark? You know, my response isn't easy. It's always like, well, way before it ever, you know, even began.
Yeah, you're like in the BC era of Landmark.
Yeah.
Right? And so all of your like experience and love for wine and beverage has come kind of alongside Mark, and you really learned on the job, learned by doing it.
Right, yeah. I mean, he, you know, he's a great visionary, and especially in trusting in someone like myself to take over, of course, I like to say, right? But I remember walking around the restaurant in the beginning with the wine list, right? And I had it like rolled up like it was like a playbook. Because I was nervous, you know. I was just learning on the job by traveling, reading, self-taught. I never took any classes. And he was like, what's that? I'm like, I just need to hold on. He's like, put it down. He's like, just be yourself. Just talk to people. Be, you know, just be real. And, you know, that's, I think, how the foundation of what the culture of Landmark and the wine program, you know, that's one of the ways it really came about. You know, it was a really unique approach to wine at the time. You know, one of the things we keep talking about is accessibility, and we wanted to be accessible with our prices. So that meant, you know, we'd like to call it a non-traditional markup. So basically our prices were kept between traditional New York City restaurants and New York wine shops. Guys like you who say, we make you look bad. You're the first one at the bar at night coming in to get a great bottle of wine at a great price, you know, and it's become a nice teaching institution, especially with that, the pricing structure, as well as the approach that we took with no wines by the glass. Right, that was a big thing.
So you just have half bottles and 750s.
Half bottles, 750s, magnums. Yeah. You know, especially when we were low on the prices, we had people in the industry telling us that we were going to cheapen luxury goods. You're crazy. No one will ever. You'll never be able to make your margins. My thought was, if you give someone, you know, a great value, they'll come back. As well as we saw guys, you know, buying twice the amount of wine because they could afford it. And if you're someone that maybe would never get that $75, $85 bottle of wine in a restaurant, you will get it at our spot because that's $125, $130 bottle somewhere else.
Yeah.
So people step outside even their comfort zone. I mean, everyone's happy, right? We're selling more wine, so the winemakers are happy. The servers are happy because their check average is up. and the guests are happy because they're getting a great value for, you know, a great price.
And they're probably drinking a better wine at that price point than they normally would be.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, I mean, that's just fantastic. And then tell us about how you just approach the different wine lists between Landmark and Ditch Plains.
Yeah, so Ditch Plains is our New York style fish shack, right? So lobster rolls, surf and videos, the famous Ditch Dog, which is hot dog topped off with mac and cheese, right? That's another big thing that took on a life of its own. That's a whole nother crazy story. I think the spaces define a lot of times what you're going
to put on.
If
that's a crazy story, we want to hear this
story. So we're sitting around in the beginning of Ditch Plains in the West Village, and we're testing out menu items, and Peter Hansen, our other partner, director of operations, he tells the server, hey, have the kitchen put on some cheese on my hot dog, right? So she puts on cheese on the hot dog. Ticket comes up in the kitchen. The guy was cooking was like, well, he didn't really know what it was. So we're sitting there. All of a sudden, there's two hot dogs come out, topped off with mac and cheese. And we were like, what is that? I mean, it was just mounds. So he just figured he'd put mac and cheese because that's what he thought was, you know, the cheese on the hot dog. And the Ditch Dog was born. So we kept it off the menu for a while. It was sort of like, that was one of the things you had to know to order.
Yeah.
And when people started seeing it go out, they were like, same reaction. What the hell is that? And they started ordering it. Well, flash forward like a year and a half later, and Murphy's on Martha Stewart, you know, as the best hot dog in the United States. And it was just one of those real things. You're like, organically, things just come about. Yeah, you could never predict that, right?
Yeah.
It's just like taking on life.
It's almost as if you're like, oh, we're going to do like a mac and cheese hot dog from the beginning. Then it wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It would never have been as good.
No.
And how's that affected the restaurants? I mean, Mark's kind of blown up, right? He's like a celebrity chef at this point. And
yeah, it's interesting with him and with being on television on Chopped. And I mean, you've met Mark. He's a salt of the earth kind of guy. Like he's a smart dude and just real genuine. And it's interesting seeing his persona with the television celebrity world because he's a legit chef and restaurateur, right? You see some people in the industry that, you know, starting to come up since it really blew up.
Yeah.
They're coming into the industry just to be on television, right? But he's got some street cred. He's got restaurants. He's got a restaurant group. He's got a catering company. You know, he has over, you know, we have over 500 employees now. Like, it's legit. So, he doesn't need the television part of it. A lot of the times he does, he'll do it just to help feed, you know, the restaurants and have people come in. I'm always amazed though too, because we are so family friendly, how many kids watch Chopped and are
amazing.
Really like getting into it. And, you know, one of the best compliments he's gotten is like, you know, from parents with their kids, he's like, you know, we watch the show and then we try and recreate the dishes at home with our kids. And it's a great bonding moment. I mean, you talk about family and food and you get kids at a young age, probably like both of us were, you know, really like getting into food. It's just great. I mean, it's not only nourishing you, you know, physically, but
yeah,
spiritually, mentally, you know, and that time that you share with people in the kitchen is priceless, right?
Do you often get like hopeful kids or people coming in like, is Mark, is Chef Mark in tonight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're still, you know, New York based, so we're always in the restaurants. You know, we have our offices off site, but we're in there all the time. And you know, it's not, you know, not uncommon to just have people walk up and just take a picture, or can we just talk to you? And he just had a book come out last week actually called Season with Authority. So that's his first, that's amazing that it's his first cookbook. But you know, it's just confident home cooking. It's like the Landmark cuisine. It's just simple ingredients, easily made, nothing too fancy, nothing towers and foams and leaning. It's just good food that we like to eat every day and that we think people would like to eat every day. So.
Yeah. And what kind of wines do you think pair well with this kind of straightforward, flavorful, good food?
Right. I think it's easy. You know, there's the food is just something that the ingredients you can really take from different parts of the world. You know, we say Landmark is a French bistro with Italian influence, right? But those flavors, rosemary, thyme, right? Meat, chicken, fish, pasta, specials. There's such a great opportunity to pair with so many different bottles. Being in New York, we have access to so many great things, right? We're spoiled. You know, you go other places, they just don't get those wines there. So for me, you know, it's great to pair, you know, a great steak with a great bottle of Bordeaux, but you know, because of the accessibility and the pricing structure and the half bottles, you can step outside your comfort zone. And I think it's makes my job a lot easier. I think people take that sometimes too serious, the food pairing. You know, it's like, because what tastes good to me might not taste good to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree. And you can have one bottle of wine and you have like two or four people, everyone's having appetizer, a different entree.
How
like
do you,
you can't pair something perfectly with every dish, so you need something.
Right.
And yeah, and just on your point about us having such access, it's amazing how many times producers come here from Europe. And, you know, I meet with Italian producers more than anyone else, and they'll like want to drink Italian wine in the restaurant. I'm like, well, you're coming from Italy. Like, well, we actually don't get this one. Like, it's not available like in our town, in our region, even because it's from another region. So I either have to go to that other region in Italy or I see it here. So I want to drink it here.
Right. I mean, I think one of the first times I really understood that was my first real wine trip was to Burgundy. And, you know, looking at the wine list, and it was like, I didn't understand it. I was like, why is there just Burgundian wines on the list? And then even going to some people's cellars or houses, it was just Burgundian wine, except for one guy. I don't know if you ever met Christian Moreau. He's a producer up in Chablis. And his cellar, he had Ridge, he had Heights, he had all these like American wines. He's like, I like to try different things. It was really interesting. And I think that his thought also matches personality because he's a very personal guy.
Yeah.
So it made sense. Vivacious. Like he wanted to try different things, you know? But yeah, we, you know, New York is, we're spoiled. I mean, we just get access to so many amazing things that I think, I mean, I definitely don't take it for granted. So, you know, we try and pass it on to our guests, you know, and have them try stuff. I mean, the half bottle approach is always fantastic because you can really, you know, we started in Tribeca. I had like, she had like 25 of them. There wasn't that many and they were mostly French. And then with the success of the program, people started producing them more and more. So, you know, to your point of there's four people eating, you know, not everyone maybe is going to match well with the one bottle of wine. Well, you want to stay with white so you can get a half bottle of Vermentino, and I want to go with a Bordeaux, and everyone's happy.
Great. You know? We do a fantastic job of it. On that note, though, we're going to take just a quick break. We'll be back with more from with Dave Lombardo from Benchmark Restaurants.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
All right, and we're back on In the Drink. I have David Lombardo, the wine and beverage director for Benchmark Restaurants here in the studio. That's Landmark, Tribeca, the original Landmark in Time Warner, Ditch Plains, and new restaurant, Kingside,
yeah.
Which is actually the only one I haven't been to yet.
So rude, man.
I'm
like,
sorry.
Like you're not busy enough? not eating every day and just drinking your life away here?
I am actually. It's sad, but
yeah, Kingside's fun. Yeah, Kingside's fun. Kingside is a new project for us. It's about a year and a half old. It is on 57th Street between 6th and 7th Avenues in the Viceroy Hotel, and that cuisine there is called, well, it's New American. You know, you open up these places, and one of the first questions everyone wants to know is, what's the cuisine going
to
be
like?
They want
to pigeonhole you.
Yeah,
into, like,
totally.
Like,
yeah. So, I mean, that's why we had heard
good
this.
Food.
Yeah. It's good food. Yeah, yeah. It's good food. I mean, New American gives us the opportunity to do basically whatever we want. You know, it's still under an umbrella of our style of cooking. You know, it's a little more focused cuisine, I think. But we tried to bring a little bit of downtown to that block. And our first time opening up in a hotel, which was interesting. You know, we said we didn't want to have...
Interesting, like, oh, she has a good personality. Interesting. Or, like,
well, no, you know, it's just, it's like we didn't want to have a hotel restaurant. We just wanted to have a restaurant that happened to be in a hotel and still focusing on neighborhood guests that come in, you know, four nights a week and have meals with us and have a great drink and a great price.
Yeah, I imagine that's challenging. Though I feel like some restaurants recently have really accomplished that, like Narcissa in the Standard East. You're in there, it doesn't feel like a hotel restaurant.
Right.
How are the ways, like, what did you proactively do to kind of separate it from that? Do you have to walk through the hotel for the entrance? Or?
No, so, I mean, one thing, there's two separate entrances, one to get into the hotel, and that lobby's small, the entrance of ours, it's great. There's so much, the whole front of the restaurant, so much, it's glass, so you can see in, and there's a beautiful bar, and we worked with Roman and Williams on the design of that, and it's just some beautiful, like, black and white and red, and just a little touch of, like, old New York. It was a beautiful chef's counter in the back that we sort of took inspiration from, either, like, a sushi counter or, like, an old 50s diner, right? These red swivel chairs that go back and forth, and, you know... It's just fun. It's fun up there. Yeah.
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 I think we just got some background music here.
Like
the guys at Roberta's are setting up for service. And then the wine list that, like, kind of most, you know, it's just, like, super impressive over at Landmark in the Time Warner. We actually have a special guest in the, who just got here into the studio. James, welcome to In the Drink.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You recently came to New York from, or came back to New York from a stint in DC. What brought you back to New York? How's it going?
It's great to be back in New York. I spent the past 5 years in DC, working on some other projects and came back to New York, to sort of try to do what I did in DC here. In the meantime, working with an old friend of mine, David. We've known each other for about 10 years now.
Ooh, that's long, man.
Yeah. Wow. Do you guys work together 10 years ago?
We've never worked directly together besides, you know, outside events, and some of those you were part of as well. We always sort of had the same passion and same, like, energy in terms of, you know, wine and beverage and service. So, you know, it was something that I was looking forward to coming back. David was fortunate to give me employment at Landmark Time Warner, and then my position has sort of grown into the wine director there. And what David does there and what I sort of follow him for are things that I really didn't understand at first, and I'm sure you, Joe, can understand that, like, this half bottle program. It's like I couldn't wrap my brain around how it could possibly financially work, and how, you know, like, why would you only do half bottles?
Haters, man, haters.
It's the markups. I mean, it's half the size of a 750, and you know this, the standard, you know, way to sell wine. And then once you really get into it and you know pick his brain, you know, you see the way that the inventory systems are set up, the way people are ordering, the approachability of the list and the prices, the direct work with some of the wineries and the producers, you know, you get to see how it really translates into a successful business model where it probably will only exist in this country at benchmark restaurants. If someone else tried to do it, I don't think they would have the wherewithal
as well.
It's interesting.
And I want to talk about Landmark, but I mean, it's just unique to have someone who was in DC for 5 years on the show. I feel like that DC is kind of having a burgeoning, bubbling moment. You worked at Graffiato, right? And you worked also in a new ramen place that I actually haven't been to. But I feel like you have a really good insight. Like, what's going on in DC right now? One of my favorite restaurants in America, Little Cerro, is in D.C. I feel like everyone in the industry goes there when they go down there, but it's so damn good.
It's D.C. has sort of had a huge rebirth in the last, I would say, 3 years. I think they quadrupled the number of restaurants in like the 4 mile radius of the capital. It still is getting there in terms of, you know, concepts and creativity. You know, there's a lot of steakhouses and, you know, things of that sort because you know, are catering to, you know, expense accounts and things of that sort. A lot of suits and ties. But, you know, with that, the people that are opening, you know, special concepts and, you know, sort of unique one-offs are really killing it and sort of inspiring other people to go the same route instead of just, you know, putting another Capitol Grill, you know, 2 miles from the next one. And you know, the economy is great down there because it's sort of in its own little bubble. There's a lot of government money, recession-proof kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunity. Big chefs moving down.
It's exciting. Cool to see, bro. Every time I go down there, I feel like there's a couple of new spots, and they're all pretty good.
It was great to see it, and great to, you know, get that experience from a smaller market and sort of help relate that to a bigger market or the biggest market, New York.
Yeah. Now, David, let's talk about Landmark in Time Warner.
Yes.
You're able to take this idea of your wine program and, like, grow it to this, like, enormous, like, right. 10,000 bottles in your cellar. Amazing list, and it's in this you're such a neighborhood restaurant in Tribeca. Were you able to, like, is it a neighborhood restaurant in Time Warner? Like, how did you translate that feeling, that warmth that you guys had from your original space?
We were open just about, I'd say, about 3 years in Tribeca. Great success. I mean, just 7 days a week, 24/7, right, head down, just banging it out. And Murphy gets a call from the guys from Related for a space at the Time Warner Center. His first reaction was, do you know who I am? Like, I'm not Thomas Keller or John George was in there at the time, you know, Massa, like Gray Kunz was in there at the time. And they're like, no, we get it. Like, we need an everyday restaurant up here. You know, there was a line out the door for Whole Foods, and then there was Per Se. There was nowhere for people to eat. So we want a neighborhood spot. So we walked the space. We went in there, 11,000 square feet, totally concrete, nothing going on. We looked at each other, a few of us, and we're like, let's do it. Let's give it a shot, you know? And we just wanted, it was interesting to take this little tiny two-story, you know, brick restaurant, Landmark Tribeca concept, and just physically lay it out for that space. And we worked really hard to break this monster space up and create these little pockets of intimacy so people still felt like they were in a little spot downtown. There was a restaurateur who was looking at the restaurant before us and had left his plans there, you know, for design. And it was basically 75% of the space was kitchen and 25% of the space was seating, right? So we took the paper and we were just like, huh. And we just turned it around, and we're like, "Yeah, that works." 25% of the kitchen, and then we'll bang out 75% for the for the restaurant itself. And I'll tell you, Joe, I still am. I mean, it's been almost, I think, like 8 years up at Landmark Time Warner Center. I go in there sometimes, man. I'm like, I don't get it. I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, it's just, we're open from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m. Three meal periods. 300 seats, right? It won't be uncommon to have 200 covers in before 10 o'clock in the morning on certain days. And it's on the third floor in New York City in a building in what they like to call a vertical shopping experience. And there's a nice view of Central Park.
It's a high-end mall.
Yeah, it's a high-end mall. Yeah, exactly. And we just bang it out. I look around there sometimes and I'm like, where do these people come from? I mean, it's wonderful and it's great, but sometimes it's like, wow, like, so it's a proven concept in this little tiny little restaurant in the West, in Tribeca, and then it translates to this 300-seat monster up in Time Warner Center.
That's crazy.
It's constantly filled up. It's just, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the concept and the accessibility, the approach, you know, and just the, you know, we talk sometimes about the culture, you know, and the support that we give each other in the restaurants and just really try and foster this community. You know, people are I am so thankful for all the years of the people that have come through our doors and have shared their lives with us under our roof. But, you know, one of the biggest things I always talk about in our success is the amount of people we've been able to have on our team and to employ that have been able to build a house in another country or put their kids through school or just live their lives and pursue their dreams. I mean, these are the people that are running your restaurant when you're not there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and to have restaurants that, that have such longevity, you're obviously doing something right and you're treating people well. And then, it almost, is even more, it gives like more a sense of pleasure when people right. who work with you accomplish things like big, these big lifetime sure. achievement things.
Right.
And that you're able to be a part of that.
Right. I mean, they're your family. When, sometimes when people are working for us for a while, like there's been people who have been my beverage managers, and then, you know, their next step, their next level is to take my job. Well, I like my job, so I'm not, I don't even consider it a job, by the way. You know, it's just a lifestyle. You know, it's what we do on a daily basis, and just so fortunate that it revolves around food and wine and people and culture. And then when they go to do something else, I'm their biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, great for you. Like, you're going to open up your own restaurant. You're going to go to D.C. to do your own thing, or you're traveling somewhere else to do something else. And, you know, we're proud of them. It's like your kids.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a family. I mean, you come from a strong family background like myself, with, you know, being first generation here in the U.S. You know, parents are from Sicily. So it's just, you know, it's a really great feeling to be a part of, especially the looking back and still seeing the longevity. It's like, wow.
Insane. Just going back to James real quick. I mean, it sounds like you have a big job, like 27 meal periods there, a huge seller. Like, how do you keep up with just the huge amount of just volume that goes through that place?
Well, there's some really great systems that are in place there that really help facilitate, you know, keeping track of the said, you know, 800,000 bottles or however many there are in there at one time. You know, it's obviously a full-time job, and most of it does revolve around, you know, beverage. The inventory systems that we have are extremely detailed. A lot of people think this, you know, the wine business is all about, you know, cheersing your glass and, you know, and drinking wine, but it's certainly, well, my job is a business. I spend most of my time, you know, in a quote unquote office, you know, behind a laptop, you know, with a clipboard and a pencil behind my ear. Mm-hmm. Granted, there are many opportunities for me to, you know, go out on the floor and drink wine and, you know, meet people. But with a monster restaurant like that, you need to be like dedicated to that program when you're, you know, a huge amount of your revenue is going through there. You need to have extremely tight controls because it is so big. So you think things can fall through the cracks and not matter, but, you know, it's every single detail that counts. And, you know, you can see people. The thing about talking about the accessibility of Landmark, especially at Time Warner Center, is I think my like aha moment of realizing what the plan was there was, you know, you walk by a table and there'll be like a kid with a plate of chicken fingers and fries, the dad eating bone marrow and foie gras and drinking like a $400 bottle of Bordeaux at the same time. And you're like, that's what it is. And, you know, for the beverage, you know, you have to have, you know, little cups of apple juice and you have to have first growth Bordeaux. You know, it's a much different, you know, system than a typical restaurant is used to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. It's definitely a place to gain some like really cool firsthand experience of, you know, a unique anomaly in a third story of a vertical mall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to have you back in New York. And
thank you.
Congratulations. And I think we'll be hearing more from you in the near future.
Hope so.
All right. Dave, unfortunately, we're out of time, but it's been such a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much,
the show.
Thank you, buddy.
I can't believe we haven't had you sooner.
So I was sitting by my phone every day, like, will he call? When is he going to call?
As I said, just one of my favorite guys around in the industry, one of the nicest guys, and just awesome, awesome restaurants and great places to drink wine.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. This has been also, wait, a quick thanks to Jory Morales and Jack Inslee, the producers of the show. You guys are the best. Thank you for making it happen every week. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening,